All right. Listen, we got some interesting stuff sent in about employee inventions and contracts. So we're going to take a deep dive into a pretty fascinating case that went all the way to the New Jersey Supreme Court. It's Ingersoll Rand v. Ciavatta.
Oh, yeah.
And it all revolves around a former employee, Armand Ciavatta, and his invention of a new type of minor roof stabilizer after he left the company.
Interesting.
But get this, Ingersoll Rand, his former employer, they tried to claim ownership of it, even though he created it after leaving.
Really?
Yeah, talk about a legal tug of war.
So what makes this case particularly interesting is this thing called a holdover clause that was in Ciavatta's employment contract.
A holdover clause.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of ominous.
Yeah.
What exactly does that mean for employees who might have similar clauses, you know, in their contracts?
Well, essentially, this clause stated that Ciavatta was obligated to give Ingersoll Rand any inventions he created within 1 year of leaving.
Oh, wow.
If they were related to his work there.
So even if you leave a company, they could still come after you like a year later and be like, hey, that's ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
Yes.
For anybody leaving a job to pursue their own ventures.
Yeah, it raises a lot of questions about, you know, where's the line between protecting company interests and fostering innovation?
Right. So Ciavatta invents this new mine roof stabilizer. So this is like a completely new design, right?
Right.
Why would Ingersoll Rand think they had any claim to this?
Well, Ingersoll Rand already had their own mine roof stabilizer on the market. And while the details of their technology were public knowledge,
okay,
they argued that because Ciavatta had worked on their stabilizer, any invention he developed, even on his own time, was theirs because of his prior knowledge and experience during his employment.
So they were really trying to, like, cast a wide net there.
Yeah.
And just say, well, you worked in this field, so anything you come up with is ours.
Exactly.
Did the courts buy that argument?
Well, that's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
A lower court actually initially sided with Ingersoll Rand and upheld the holdover clause. But Ciavatta didn't give up. He appealed.
Hmm.
And the case ultimately landed in the New Jersey Supreme Court.
Hold on. So a lower court actually sided with the company?
Yeah.
That's kind of unsettling.
Yeah.
What happened next? I'm guessing the Supreme Court had a different perspective.
They did. The New Jersey Supreme Court used something called the Solari-Whitmire test to determine if restrictions like the holdover clause are enforceable.
Okay, so let's unpack this Solari-Whitmire test.
Okay.
It sounds like a pretty crucial piece of the puzzle here.
It is. So the Solari-Whitmire test boils down to three fundamental questions.
Right.
The first one is, does the employer have a legitimate business interest that they're trying to protect with this restriction?
Okay, so in this case, would Ingersoll Rand's desire to, you know, prevent former employees from using their knowledge of mine roof stabilizers to create competing products, would that be considered a legitimate interest?
Right.
That seems pretty broad.
That's exactly what the court had to decide.
Yeah.
Was Ingersoll Rand's interest specific enough and tied directly to Ciavatta's work, or was it just trying to stifle competition?
Right.
The second question the Solari-Whitmire test addresses is, would enforcing the restriction impose an undue hardship on the employee?
So meaning, like, would preventing Ciavatta from profiting from his invention, would that significantly harm, you know, his career or his financial well-being?
Exactly.
Okay, so they're trying to make sure that the agreement isn't, like, totally one-sided.
Right. And the third and final question the test considers is, would enforcing the restriction be bad for the public interest?
Now, that's interesting. So it's not just about the two parties involved.
Right.
It's about the impact on, like, society at large.
Exactly.
What kind of public interest concerns would the court have considered in this case?
Well, they were worried about stifling innovation.
Mm-hmm.
If companies could just claim ownership of any invention that was vaguely related to an employee's past work, then it would discourage people from leaving companies to pursue their own ideas.
So it's like they're saying, we want to foster an environment where people feel empowered to create and innovate even after leaving a big company.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. So how did the New Jersey Supreme Court apply this three-part test to the specifics of Ingersoll Rand v. Ciavatta?
Well, they determined that Ingersoll Rand did not have a legitimate interest in Ciavatta's invention because the technology behind their existing stabilizer was already public knowledge.
So just because you worked in a particular field doesn't mean your former company gets to own every idea you have related to that field after you leave.
Right.
That's a win for employee rights, wouldn't you say?
It is. The court was careful to clarify that companies can sometimes have a protectable interest in information that goes beyond conventional trade secrets.
Oh, so there is like a little bit of gray area here.
Right.
Could you elaborate on that? What's the distinction between like general industry knowledge and something unique that a company could legitimately protect.
It's a subtle distinction.
Right. So for employees who are leaving to start their own ventures, how do you distinguish between the two?
Yeah.
What are like the defining characteristics there?
The court made it clear that this type of specialized information has to be very narrowly defined. It's not just something that is widely known within the industry, and it has to be directly connected to the employee's specific role and responsibilities within the company.
Okay.
It's knowledge they acquired solely due to their position there.
So, for instance, if like a company develops, you know, some revolutionary top secret formula.
Right.
And an employee working on that project, you know, gains highly specialized knowledge.
Right.
That's crucial to its development.
Right.
That knowledge, even if it doesn't fit like the strict definition of a trade secret,
right,
that could still fall under the company's protection.
Exactly. Yeah. But in Ingersoll Rand's case, the specifics of their mine roof stabilizer design weren't confidential.
Yeah.
It wasn't some closely guarded secret.
Right.
And the court emphasized that employees have the right to use their general skills and experience even after leaving a company.
Okay, that's a relief to hear.
Yeah.
It's reaffirming that you're not like trapped
right.
by your past employers
exactly.
when it comes to innovation.
Yeah.
But in this case, even though Ingersoll Rand had this holdover clause,
right.
the court ultimately sided with Ciavada.
Yes.
What were their reasons for doing so?
Well,
did they consider like the impact on Ciavada if they had ruled in favor of the company?
Absolutely. They acknowledged that forcing Ciavada to surrender his invention would have been profoundly unfair. He had dedicated his time, effort, and resources to developing this new stabilizer after leaving Ingersoll Rand.
Right.
And to strip him of the fruits of his labor would have been a significant financial blow, not to mention the potential damage to his future career prospects.
It's like they were saying, we recognize that this could really stifle like entrepreneurial spirit.
Right.
You know, and discourage people from taking the risk of going out on their own.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've talked about the first two parts of the Solari Whitmire test.
Right.
The legitimate business interest.
Right.
The potential hardship to the employee.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the third one.
Okay.
The public interest.
All right.
How did the court view that aspect in this case?
Well, the court's emphasis on the public interest in this case sends a strong message.
Okay.
They expressed concern that siding with Ingersoll Rand could create this chilling effect on innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if anyone who left a company had to constantly worry that their former employer might claim ownership of their new idea, even if it wasn't directly related to trade secrets.
Right. It would create this like climate of fear and uncertainty for anybody considering leaving a big company to start their own thing.
Right.
People might hesitate to pursue like groundbreaking ideas.
Yeah.
Fearing potential legal battles. And that would be bad for progress in any field.
Exactly. The court understood that fostering innovation is vital for a healthy and competitive economy.
Uh-huh.
They saw this case as having the potential to set a precedent that could hinder those endeavors and ultimately impede economic growth.
So they were basically saying, we want to encourage people to take risks, push boundaries,
yes.
develop new ideas, even if they were once employed by a large corporation.
Exactly.
What a powerful message. So all in all,
yeah.
the Ingersoll Rand v. Ciavada case provides some pretty crucial takeaways for both employees and employers, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For employees, it underscores the importance of carefully reviewing employment contracts, mm-hmm. particularly any clauses relating to intellectual property and inventions.
Right.
Don't just skim over the legal jargon.
Yeah.
Take the time to really understand what you are agreeing to.
It's like reading the fine print before you sign anything.
Right.
You know, you need to know what you're getting yourself into.
Exactly.
Especially when it comes to like your future creative endeavors.
Right.
What other advice would you offer to employees, particularly those in fields where, you know, innovation is paramount?
Documentation is key. If you're working on a potentially patentable idea.
Okay.
Keep meticulous records of your thought process, your research, your design, everything.
Yeah.
This can be invaluable in demonstrating that the invention was solely yours.
It's like building a fortress of evidence
right.
to protect your intellectual property.
Exactly.
It's good advice, even if you're not working on like a world-changing invention.
Yeah.
What about employers? What are some key takeaways they should glean from this case?
Well, for employers, the case highlights the importance of clarity and specificity in employment agreements. Vague, overly broad holdover clauses like the one Ingersoll Rand used are less likely to withstand legal scrutiny.
So it's not enough to just like insert some generic clause
right.
into every contract and expect it to hold up in court.
Exactly.
They need to be a little bit more strategic in their approach.
If companies want to safeguard their intellectual property, they need to articulate exactly what information they consider confidential and why. They need compelling evidence demonstrating that this information isn't readily available and that it grants them a competitive edge.
Okay.
And they need to establish a clear link between this information and the employee's specific role.
So it's about focusing on protecting legitimate business interests.
Right.
And not trying to stifle employee creativity or just like indiscriminately claim ownership over everything.
Exactly. It seems like a balanced approach benefits everyone.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And let's not forget the court's emphasis on that public interest aspect.
Right.
It kind of adds another layer of complexity here.
It does.
Even if a company can prove, you know, a legitimate interest
yeah.
in restricting an employee's invention.
Right.
If that restriction is seen as harmful to competition or to overall innovation.
Right.
The court might still rule against them.
Exactly.
It's a reminder that it's not just a two-way street between the employer and employee.
Right.
There's a bigger picture to consider, a responsibility to foster an environment where innovation can flourish.
Exactly. Employment law isn't solely about protecting corporate interests.
Right.
It's about ensuring a fair and competitive marketplace that encourages innovation and benefits society as a whole.
This case really highlights the intricate balance.
It does.
Between protecting company interests
yeah.
and fostering employee innovation.
Uh-huh.
It's clear that both sides need to be mindful of their rights and responsibilities.
Yeah.
Now we've been focusing on physical inventions.
Right.
Like a mine roof stabilizer.
Yeah.
What about the digital age?
Right.
How do these principles apply to the world of software algorithms, online platforms,
yeah.
where so much innovation is happening?
That's a great question, and it's a perfect segue into the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
The legal principles we've discussed certainly apply to digital creations as well, but there are some unique nuances and challenges that arise when dealing with intellectual property in the digital realm.
I'm interested to explore those nuances. So stay tuned, folks, as we venture into the digital frontier to see how these legal battles are playing out in the world of software algorithms and all things digital.
Sounds good.
It's going to be a fascinating journey.
Welcome back.
We're now in the final part of our exploration of employee inventions and, you know, those tricky legal situations that can pop up. When those inventions clash with former employers,
right.
it's been quite a journey so far.
It has. We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. We've gone from holdover clauses and the intricacies of the Solari-Whitmire test to that, you know, crucial balance between protecting company interests and nurturing innovation.
Right.
But now we're shifting gears a bit. We're heading into the digital frontier.
All right.
We're talking about software algorithms, apps, all those like intangible creations that are so central to our world today.
Right.
And I imagine that the digital age brings like a whole new set of challenges when it comes to intellectual property rights.
Absolutely. Think about it, a physical invention, like that mine roof stabilizer we were talking about.
Right.
That's tangible.
You can see it.
You can touch it. You can grasp its mechanics.
Right.
But software, it's a different beast altogether.
It's lines of code, essentially ideas transformed into a language
right.
that computers understand.
Right.
And that code can be copied,
yeah.
modified, shared with incredible ease.
Exactly. And that ease of replication makes the issue of ownership incredibly complex.
Right.
How do you determine who owns an idea when it exists as digital information?
So how do those legal principles we discussed earlier,
right.
the ones related to holdover clauses and the Solari-Whitmire test,
okay.
how do they apply to this intangible world of digital creations?
Right.
Are they still relevant?
The core principles hold true, but the application gets a little bit more intricate.
Okay.
Remember that the Solari-Whitmire test centers around those three key questions.
Right.
The legitimacy of the employer's interest, the potential hardship on the employee, and the impact on public interest.
Right.
Those questions are still relevant in the digital world, but proving them can be trickier.
Okay, so could you give us an example of how this might play out in a real-world scenario?
Sure.
Say a software engineer develops a groundbreaking algorithm while working for a tech company.
Okay.
Then after leaving that company, they use a similar algorithm to launch their own startup. Could their former employer lay claim to that algorithm?
That's a great question. And the answer, like with many legal matters, is it depends.
Okay.
The first thing we need to consider is whether the algorithm was developed specifically as part of the engineer's job duties at the tech company.
Okay.
Was it something they were explicitly tasked with creating, using company resources and under their guidance?
So if it was a core part of their job,
Right.
the company might have a stronger argument for ownership.
Potentially, yes, but it's not quite that straightforward.
Okay.
We also need to ask if the algorithm incorporates any of the company's trade secrets or confidential information. It's not just about the algorithm itself, it's about the underlying knowledge or processes that went into creating it.
So the ownership question isn't just about the lines of code.
Right.
It delves deeper into the knowledge, the methods, the confidential information
Exactly.
that shaped the creation of that algorithm.
If the algorithm is built on proprietary code, data sets, methodologies that the company has actively worked to protect, they might have a legitimate claim to ownership, even if the engineer wrote the final code in their free time.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But what if the algorithm is based on more general programming principles,
Right.
like things that, any skilled software engineer would know?
Right.
How do you determine ownership then?
That's where it gets really tricky. The courts would have to weigh the company's interest in protecting their intellectual property against the engineer's right to utilize their general skills and knowledge for their own ventures.
There's that balance we keep coming back to,
Yeah.
protecting companies from unfair competition while also allowing employees to build on their expertise
Exactly.
and contribute to innovation.
And that line can be even blurrier in the digital realm, making it harder to distinguish between specific protectable information and general knowledge.
Can you give us an example of how that might play out?
Sure. Let's say a company has a unique system for personalized recommendations online,
Okay.
something that gives them a competitive edge in e-commerce. A former engineer who helped build that system leaves to start their own online marketplace using a similar recommendation algorithm.
Would the company have a legitimate claim in that scenario?
It would depend on the details of the algorithm and the knowledge involved. If the engineer's new algorithm is basically a replica of the company's system directly utilizing their trade secrets or confidential information, then yeah, the company probably has a strong case.
But what if the new algorithm is distinct in some key ways, even if it draws on similar principles?
That's when the court would need to really dive deep into the technical details,
Okay.
comparing the algorithm, scrutinizing the code, the data used, and the underlying methodology. They'd have to determine if the engineer's creation was truly independent
Oh.
or essentially derived from the company's intellectual property.
That sounds incredibly complex.
It can be.
I imagine these cases would often require expert testimony
Oh, absolutely.
from software engineers and computer scientists
Yeah.
to help the court understand the nuances.
You're exactly right. These aren't your typical contract disputes.
Right.
They often involve highly technical concepts
Right.
that require specialized knowledge to fully understand and assess.
So, for our listeners who might not be software engineers,
Yeah.
what are some key takeaways that they can apply to their own work, regardless of their field?
I'd say the most important takeaway is the importance of clarity and communication.
Okay.
Whether you're an employee or an employer, ensure your agreements clearly define what information is confidential, what rights you have to use that information after leaving a company, and what your obligations are in terms of protecting company secrets.
So it all comes back to those open and honest conversations, setting clear expectations from the start.
Exactly. And if you're an employee and you're unsure about what you can or cannot do with information you learned from your job, don't hesitate to ask for clarification.
Right.
It's always better to be cautious than to face potential legal issues later on.
And for employers, being proactive in protecting your intellectual property is key. Establish clear policies, meticulously document your trade secrets, and provide comprehensive training for employees on their responsibilities.
Excellent points. And it's important to remember that this area of law is constantly evolving as technology advances and new forms of intellectual property emerge. What's considered protectable today might not be tomorrow.
So it's an ongoing learning process.
It is.
We all need to stay informed and adaptable.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this field so fascinating.
This has been an incredible deep dive.
It has.
We've really uncovered the complexities of employee inventions in both the physical and digital worlds.
We have. It's been a pleasure exploring these legal intricacies with you.
Likewise.
And to our listeners, remember, knowledge is power.
Yes.
The more you understand your rights and obligations, the better prepared you'll be to navigate these challenges and protect your interests.
And if you ever find yourself in a tricky legal situation, never hesitate to seek professional advice.
Yes.
There are experts who can help you make sense of these complex issues and guide you towards the best course of action.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on our next deep dive.